The Athletic.
Let's talk about six, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about six.
Diaz, still Diaz, takes a deflection, and in it goes!
So Liverpool were top of the Premier League after Saturday's draw with Spurs, and of course there's two cup finals in the bag as well. But this team has set the bar so high that a draw was pretty hard to take. So what now for the title race? And was this the weekend that the dream died? Don't forget, if you're not already a subscriber to The Athletic, you can read all of the articles on Liverpool, everything else on the site. Head to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. Special price right now, £1 a month for 6 months. That's £1 a month for 6 months at theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. I'm Steve Hothersall, and this is The Red Agenda, and today we've got a couple of great guests on, James Pearce and Simon Hughes, as we reflect on that draw with Spurs. And James, it was pretty hard to get your head around. There was a deflated mood in Anfield.
Yeah, I thought it was a bit of a mix of emotions, really. Yeah, frustration and disappointment, but it was also bullish, wasn't it? I think that within a few seconds of the final whistle, the atmosphere picked up again, and I think you could see that it meant a lot to the players, the fact that the fans responded in that manner, because, you know, regardless of what happens in the next couple of weeks, you know, this has been an absolutely magnificent season. And even, you know, there wouldn't even be a title race but for the crazy high standards Liverpool have set. You know, let's not forget that, you know, that gap was 14 points at one point in January. So frustrating, and obviously compounded by Newcastle rolling over and the manner in which they ultimately did at the Etihad on Sunday. You know, huge advantage to City now with, you know, not only the 3-point cushion but the 4 extra goal difference. But you won't hear Klopp or his players conceding defeat, because, you know, I think anyone who's been a Liverpool fan for a decent period of time will know that we know that miracles do happen, and that's what Liverpool are in need of again now. And they're not in control of their own destiny. They need favours from elsewhere. But do you know what? I don't think it's completely over. They've still got Man City, have got to go to Wolves. You know, we saw Wolves take a point off Chelsea and show a lot of fight at the weekend. They've still got to go to West Ham. And I think, you know, the fact that West Ham aren't in the Europa League final, and the fact that West Ham still, you know, are trying to get a top six finish and clamber above United, you know, and then you've got the Steven Gerrard factor on the final day. So, yeah, a tough weekend to take, but not over for me.
Right, let's stay positive on the pod then. It was deflating for some. Jürgen said afterwards he told his players to not behave like, you know, they'd been to a funeral. How did you feel, Si, immediately after that draw?
I just wanted to go to bed, to be honest.
He was that drunk.
It's difficult. I mean, if you ask him from a fan perspective or a journalistic perspective, you get two slightly different answers. I mean, I suppose from a journalistic perspective, to some extent, not a huge amount changes, because Liverpool were always going to need City to slip up in some way in the last month of the season. Now they probably need City, well, they either need City to draw two games or lose one, and Liverpool to obviously scored a few goals in their victories. So, you know, it's still absolutely possible, of course. Of course it could happen. City's record at Wolves hasn't been great under Guardiola. It's a ground that's very tough to go to. Liverpool have won there regularly under Klopp, but there've been no gimmies. It's always been really close, and it's the sort of supporter base at Wolves that likes to try and upset the establishment a little bit. So I think they'll be right up for it. Do I expect City to slip up? No, because, you know, they've been in this position before. They obviously performed very well against Newcastle after the day after Liverpool's draw with Tottenham. But then if you ask as a fan, you just, it's mixed really, because you sort of think about the opportunity that Liverpool have had. Any other fan of any other team would absolutely kill for what has been in front of Liverpool. And what remains in front of Liverpool, you know, it's been an amazing season. But when it's as tantalisingly close as it is, and to making some, you know, to make not just Liverpool history, but football history, you can't help but think about that. I mean, it's impossible not to. But while there's still games left, I think you've got to just hope that the pressure gets to Manchester City's players. It certainly seemed to me yesterday, listening to Pep Guardiola talking in his post-match with some of his comments, which sounded to me a bit like some bot on Twitter just taking control of his brain, to be honest. That clearly he's feeling a bit of pressure. I think there was a lot of relief as well, you know, after a very difficult week for him. Players react differently to acute sorts of pressure. I don't expect City to slip up from here, but you just don't know. In those tight moments against decent opposition, they've got, they're playing three competitive teams, I would say. Two teams that have still got something to play for. And then, as James says, the Steven Gerrard equation, where, let's face it, he came to Anfield in December, and Villa put up a really good defensive performance that day. They're going to need to do something similar, I think, and get something on the counter-attack. If I was Steven Gerrard, I'd be looking at Tottenham's performance at City and trying to recreate that in some way.
James, just on what Si was saying then, with reference to Pep talking about Liverpool, it was all a bit odd, wasn't it? Pep saying that, you know, everyone in the world supports Liverpool. It was almost like, you know, we're in a corner fighting for ourselves. But I don't think you ever find the Liverpool manager volunteering to talk about Man City.
No, I thought it was very weird. And we've seen it before. You know, what was it, a couple of months back, Bernardo Silva suddenly started talking about Liverpool when he wasn't even asked about Liverpool. And Man City, the staff, the club in general, I think, you know, the players, you know, they do seem to have some strange obsession with Liverpool. And I'm not sure what it is. Well, I think part of it is jealousy. I think certainly Pep, he feels, I think he doesn't get the wider credit that he thinks he deserves for what he's done there and the team he's built. And it's too easily dismissed as all being down to the bottomless pit of cash that they're able to dip into. But yeah, I just thought it was really odd. And I think, you know, surely for a start, I think any Liverpool fan will know, and you know, and I feel it on social media on a daily basis, that, you know, and certainly on the back of Saturday night, the glee from fans up and down the country that Liverpool slipped up. You know, the idea that the country is like united as one behind Liverpool in the you know, and desperate to see them beat, it's just absolute rubbish, isn't it? Because, you know, for a start, I think it's uneasy for a lot of clubs seeing Liverpool pushing City so close, because I think it's quite easy to dismiss what City are doing as, well, do you know what, we can't compete with them because, you know, they've got the most expensively assembled squad ever. You know, it's not possible. But Liverpool have shown it is possible with a self-sustaining business model. If you're smart and you're shrewd and you buy players right and you develop talent and you've got the right structure in place at all levels, Liverpool have shown there is another way. It's not just all about the money. And I think for other clubs and for fans of other clubs, I think that makes them feel a bit uneasy. And I also think the other factor is there's a degree of jealousy in terms of, you know, the fact that Liverpool are in a Champions League final. We know that that is the one that Pep Guardiola wants more than anything else. He's failed again this season. So I think that's part of it. So yeah, all very odd. Yeah, I'm not quite sure what he was trying to achieve apart from, you know, playing to the galleries with the City fans a bit. Maybe he felt that he wanted to do that for them on the back of the way in which they capitulated in the Bernabeu later on.
I thought it was in some ways strange timing, but then in other ways quite understandable, because it is reflective of the pressure that he's been on under this week. You know, as James said, I think he's been brought to Man City to win the Champions League, not to win multiple Premier League titles. And if he doesn't win that, it will be a black mark on his time at Man City, no matter what the standard of football that he's produced and the domestic medals that he's won. Now, to me, it just stunk of the sort of groupthink that I believe exists at City, which has been in place for some time. And finally, he's cracked and shown really sort of what people really think at the club. And I think there's a jealousy and a misunderstanding at City about Liverpool, in the sense that, you know, City have only been a serious football club in terms of winning trophies in the last 10 to 12 years. You know, let's be honest, Liverpool's history is in terms of its success and its impact on English culture, European football culture, spans decades and decades and decades and decades. And I think it's very difficult to sort of to compete with that, and very difficult to surmount that as well. And I think that City think, you know, that there's a thought process at City, well, why are we not getting the sort of level of respect that, that Liverpool, you know, Liverpool have had over a long period of time, despite not winning the league for such a long time, if we're being totally honest. And well, it's because Liverpool's history is much greater than Man City's in terms of, you know, trophy winning, building trophy winning teams, and the popularity that the club has across the world.
Sorry, Jamie Carragher and Micah Richards were having that debate in terms of why City aren't treated as a big club. And Carragher said, well, it's just because you've not won the European Cup, basically.
Yeah, Guardiola, I think, is you know, an intelligent bloke who I would have thought would have known this, you know, when he took the job on. At the end of the day, City would not be in the position where they are now without the intervention of the ownership. And obviously there's a big debate, we could go on a big debate about now about why they're involved in football. There's an element to that, you know, that creeps into the conversation as well. I actually think in Europe there's the possibly less respect for what City have done. A, because they haven't won a European trophy. B, because Europe resents the fact that English ownership has these ownership models which have allowed English clubs to dominate over the rest of Europe in that time. So I think they're going to have it's going to be a long old battle to win people over, hearts and minds. You know, it's a heart and mind sort of war, if you like, for City, which is going to take a long time to earn the sort of respect that I think they look at Liverpool, which Liverpool has as a club. But then, you know, we've spoken about Pep as well. We should probably speak about Jürgen Klopp's comments, which I thought were...
What about Pep's style of play?
About Conte's football.
Sorry, Conte's style of play. That's what I meant to say.
Both managers have shown that really, you know, that they're not infallible in these pressure moments. I think that, you know, it just shows you the impact that I think it has on people.
Well, it can get spiky, can't it? I think this was always going to be the toughest game in the running, wasn't it, James? This is a Spurs side that have done the double over Manchester City, so there's no underestimating the quality in there. And they came with a certain game plan.
Yeah, and they carried it out absolutely perfectly, didn't they? I think you have got to give big credit to Antonio Conte for just how well drilled and organised they were. You know, you were watching it, you know, having sat in the Anfield press room and watched Manchester United fall to pieces again at Brighton earlier, thinking, you know, it's hard to believe that Man United turned their noses up at appointing Conte. And, you know, he's put Tottenham, you know, in the mix to challenge right to the end for a Champions League spot. And do you know what? I think with Klopp's comments afterwards, we've seen it before from him when, you know, I think back to the night when Liverpool went out of the Champions League to Atletico Madrid. And he said then, didn't he, he was quite critical of Diego Simeone and his style, and said, you know, I can't believe with the players they've got, you know, really you play that kind of football. And it was kind of similar at the weekend, although I think what he was trying to say was, he was asked, how impressed were you by how Tottenham defended? And essentially he said, I'm the wrong person to ask that, because he said, that's not my brand of football. He just said, that's not me. That's not the way I would set a team up. You know, world-class players that they've got, I would feel like you have to do more to impose yourselves on the game. So, yeah, you can interpret that as sour grapes, maybe to a degree, but I think that was the point he was getting at. That's just not his way of playing, and that's not hypocrisy. I can't think of a single game when he set Liverpool up just to frustrate an opponent in the manner in which we've seen teams come and do it recently. I think the difference was, we've seen it time and time again, teams try and do that to Liverpool this season and not been good enough to pull it off. I think Tottenham were brilliant on the day. You know, they could even have nicked it with the couple of chances they created on the counter-attack. But more than anything, I just thought Liverpool weren't quite at it, especially second half. I think they've been so good at finding a way to win, you know, whether it's grinding it out or blowing teams away. And they just, I don't know whether it was a bit of pressure, whether it was a bit of mental or physical fatigue, but they just, there was a bit of panic that set in. You know, when I was looking at the data afterwards, and you know, they slung 31 open play crosses into the box on Saturday, more than in any other game this season. And out of those 31, six connected with a Liverpool player. And it just felt like they kind of deviated from the game plan a bit. And because I think they just got frustrated. And so, yeah, partly that was down to how well Tottenham kept them at bay. And just, I just didn't think, you know, Liverpool just lost their way a bit, you know, especially when, you know, when it got really frantic late on, because, you know, essentially they were playing 2-4-4 for those last 15 minutes after Diaz equalised.
Yeah, you can read all about James's thoughts and some of those stats as well on the site at the moment. It's called This Time Liverpool Couldn't Find a Way. The opener from Son was outstanding, Si. You know, Son and Kane, obviously, that's the quality that they do have on the counter-attack. But it was actually only the second goal that Liverpool have conceded at home this calendar year.
Yeah, well, I mean, those two players, I think this is where Jurgen Klopp, what he's trying to get at, really, because the balance has never quite been right at Tottenham, has it, over the last 5 to 10 years, which explains why they haven't quite got over the line when they needed to. So, obviously, Pochettino, very exciting attacking team, weren't able to win the Premier League when they probably were better than Leicester that season in 2016. Obviously, missed out on the Champions League final to Liverpool. They then go and get Mourinho, who is the opposite, really, in terms of what he's trying to do. And then I'd say Conte is more like Mourinho, but not quite enough like Pochettino to maybe get that, you know, harness what's there. Because those two players, Kane and Son, are just brilliant. I mean, I think Son for a number of years now has caused Liverpool problems in pretty much every game that he's played. Always a threat. Kane, admired him for what he's achieved at Tottenham. I'd be surprised if he looks back on his career with many more medals that he's got now, which is obviously none. which for the player of his talent and the record that he's got at Tottenham, probably merits more than that. But yeah, I mean, I just think that with Liverpool, they didn't quite do enough in the second half themselves. Ultimately, with too many crosses into the box for me. Felt a little bit desperate towards the end. I know you're hoping there might be a mistake, and I think a couple of years ago when they beat Tottenham in the 2018-19 run-in, the goal that they scored came from a bit of speculation, you know, in the final minutes of the game. But I thought Tottenham executed the game plan really well. In terms of Klopp's arguments, I mean, there is an argument to say, well, Tottenham's holding midfielder was in the penalty box in the last minute, you know, and could have scored himself for a winner for Tottenham, which, had they won the game, I think it wouldn't have been probably a fair result. But it's one of those results where you could say, well, you know, Tottenham have done enough to win the game. So for me, I think Liverpool, three games to go. And I know Man City have lost both games to Tottenham this season. And you could say, well, clearly they're a good side. But I think with three games to go, if Liverpool aren't beating Tottenham at home in a game they need to win, you have to question, are they quite good enough to get over the line in this moment? Because I always compare to Man United 15, 20 years ago. You'd expect them to beat Tottenham with three games to go when the pressure's really on. People might not like to hear that, I don't know, but I just feel it's Liverpool have got to be, you've got to be beating Spurs at home. I'm sorry, Steve. You've got to, no matter what they've done.
You do, and perhaps at half-time, people were thinking, well, Jurgen's done it on quite a few intervals this season and something different will change in this second half. Didn't quite work out that way. The one thing I was scratching my head about was that the substitution late on in the game, James. So I felt it came really late, but then I was massively surprised. It was Naby and not Divock Origi.
Yeah, me too, Steve. Yeah, I couldn't really understand the sense in that one. I thought, especially, you know, with the amount of crosses Liverpool were slinging into the box, because, you know, I think what we do know about Origi is he does just give you something different. He gives you more of a physical presence and more of a target in the box. You know, even whether he wins the first header, then, you know, whether, you know, you the second balls to compete for. And as Si said, you know, I think it just increases the likelihood of just something dropping kindly for you, because he has that ability to make things happen. And, you know, like he did to Everton the other week, I think it's in opponents' heads as well, the fact that he has this habit of delivering late shows. So yeah, I thought that was an odd one. Not to, you know, I expected, you know, he went out to warm up, I think, you know, I remember tweeting it probably with about 7 or 8 minutes to go, and you thought, well, that's clearly going to be the last change. Because I didn't think the substitutions, you know, really improved Liverpool. I thought, you know, Jota didn't impact the game. You know, again, you know, I think, you know, you can't be critical, can you? Because this team have just set such crazy high standards. But, you know, Mane has been absolutely sensational the last few months, but it was a really quiet night for him. You know, same with Salah. You know, he was really well shackled. It was only Diaz again that that really caused Tottenham problems in that front line. And I just thought Origi might have posed some different questions as Spurs. But I thought Klopp had a point afterwards when there were little things, little moments, weren't they, which maybe in other games have gone Liverpool's way, when he was annoyed that people hadn't anticipated that. I think it was when Thiago picked out Henderson and he knocked it back across goal, and he felt that people hadn't reacted quickly enough to that. There was the one when Trent was completely unmarked at the back post, and Thiago, who would usually put that pass on the end of Trent's boot in his sleep, overhit it by about 3 or 4 yards. And I think Tsimikas had one, and you think of that. I think you had to go back to September at Elm Road for the last time Liverpool had so many shots blocked in a game. I think it was 13 on the weekend out of their 22 attempts on goal. And again, there was some heroic defending from Spurs, but also too often when players had 2 or 3 touches when they didn't need to, and ultimately, it comes down to fine margins, doesn't it?
On the last pod side, we were talking about Mo Salah getting the Football Writers Association Player of the Year award, and arguably that's for the first half of the season, isn't it? When he was just sensational, wasn't it? If you had to judge this second half of the season, there's an argument to say Luis Diaz is Liverpool's best player, isn't there? There he was again. Goal. I know it was a deflection, but just as he did in Villarreal, changing the game out there, here he is just giving Liverpool some hope here.
Well, he makes things happen every time he gets the ball. You're thinking it could be a goal, an assist, a foul, something. I suppose you contrast that to Salah, that you don't get that feeling at the moment with him.
No, far from it.
It's been that way for a while now. Klopp has always been loyal to the players that have served him well, particularly when it comes to big games, but not really getting much of a tune out of Salah enough, I'd say, given what's at stake for Liverpool. When you think Mane has done really well as a centre forward and scored a lot of big goals the last few months, Diaz the same. It just hasn't been that way for Salah. Brilliant in the first half of the season. I mean, I'd say his best form for the club. Absolutely outstanding. But since coming back from AFCON and then the disappointment of not qualifying for the World Cup, he just hasn't quite been on it. But, I still wouldn't be surprised if he, delivers in the big moments in a Champions League final, because that's what he's capable of. But yeah, it was frustrating watching him the other night. I thought that Tottenham did a good job on him, but he wasn't able to develop any rhythm. He didn't give the indication that he was able to create a moment that could change the feeling around the game, which was what he was doing all the time, and it felt like he was doing regularly, certainly in the first half of the season.
Right, on to Villa then. So, reacquaintance with Steven Gerrard, James. And, Villa have found a bit of form, taken 7 from the last 9, had a say in the relegation race. Will they have a say in the title race?
They could have a very big say in the title race, couldn't they? With when you look at their remaining games, Liverpool at home and then obviously City away. So, yeah, I think we saw enough in that game at Anfield earlier on in the season to know that Steven Gerrard, like, his affinity with Liverpool and a history won't come into his thinking. He'll be desperate after, a real mixed period for Villa, really, over the last few months. He'll want to finish this season strongly, and especially when you see Danny Ings looking very sharp on the weekend as well. There's a number of possible kind of narratives there. So, yeah, I in the Q&A after the game on Saturday, I had some people saying to us on, time to make, loads of changes and prioritise the FA Cup final and that, and it's just like, come off it. Absolutely no chance. Whilst this title is still mathematically possible, you have to go with your absolute foot to the floor. I think the one dilemma for Klopp will be, how many changes does he make? Because I think it was difficult to say on Saturday whether fatigue did play a part as well. I think probably when you get to game 58 of the season, it probably has to. Maybe mental as much as physical. And, a relatively quick turnaround from Saturday night to a Tuesday evening game. So, you'd imagine that Joel Matip would come back into the back four. You'd imagine that there'd be a start for Naby Keita. Obviously only played the last couple of minutes. You wonder even whether he might go for the kind of steal of of James Milner in a, you know, in a tricky away game like he did at Newcastle the other week. And then, you know, up top, he could freshen it up, couldn't he, with Origi or with Jota, that obviously only played the last 25. So, but yeah, tricky game. Certainly not expecting Steven Gerrard to hand out 7 or 8 debuts to give Liverpool a helping hand. It's Klopp's gonna have to get the right response. And he, you know, as he said on Saturday night, the players were down. You know, there was a little bit of doom and gloom around the place, but yeah, I think if you can't pick yourself up and be quite excited when you look at the fixture list, which is, you know, you've got an FA Cup final at Wembley on Saturday and a Champions League final against Real Madrid in Paris on the horizon, then something's seriously wrong. And I'm sure Liverpool will come flying out the blocks at Villa Park.
And that goes back to what we were saying at the very top, side that they've just set this expectation level so ridiculously high that there's almost a feeling that Liverpool deserve to have all these trophies.
Yeah, well, you can't judge the whole season on the, I don't want to use the word failing, because it's not a failure to come second in the league and be involved in a title race. But if Liverpool don't win the league, but then maybe win 3 other trophies, you know, you can't say, well, he didn't do the quadruple. I'm sure some fans of other clubs, as James alluded to before, you know, all these fans that support Liverpool, you know, Arsenal and Man United fans also willing Liverpool on, apparently, which... very odd.
What about if you win 2 trophies and it's the League Cup and the FA Cup? And this is just hypothetical. Do you have a trophy parade at that point?
Yeah, that's a tricky one, that.
Because in any other season, reflects on the season that we're seeing. So yeah. Go on, give us your opinion on this.
I would say, for me, right. I was speaking to a friend earlier on about this, about what gets you going at a football match and why you keep going and the purpose of football. And okay, it is about winning, but it's also the sense of jeopardy, really, which jeopardy, or the feeling that you might win or lose something. So a friend of mine came around to my house yesterday, an Evertonian, who I've never seen so buoyed by what's going on, or excited about potentially, you know, staying up. And he was saying that the reason why is because, you know, years and years and years of being in the mid, you know, mid-table, sort of higher mid-table, lower mid-table, there's very little that gets you off your feet. Now, Liverpool have got the fans off the feet pretty much all season. It's a season to celebrate, I'd say. It's a season to remember. Even if they ended up not winning anything else, you know, got to admit that that's a possibility as well. Chelsea on any given day can cause Liverpool problems. They've still got quality in the team, and I think the ownership situation has affected the club, obviously. And, you know, they did lose to Everton last week, pretty poor performance, I'd say. Liverpool could absolutely batter them, but Chelsea could equally win that game. So you've got to remember that as well. That's not a gimme. But to answer your question, Steve, I would feel a bit uncomfortable, despite saying all that, I'd still feel a bit uncomfortable about having a big celebration over 2 domestic cups, particularly 2 domestic cups, which the club for a long time has not really valued.
Yet you say it's a season of celebration.
But it should be. It should be. I just sort of feel a bit uncomfortable about it. But I'm not saying that they shouldn't. I'd have to seriously think about it. Because the focus has been so much on the quadruple and the Champions League and potentially the league as well, that I haven't really given it a great deal of time to think about it that way. I would feel, given the possibility and the points that Liverpool got to, if Liverpool were to not win both of those competitions, I would still feel disappointment, but that doesn't undermine the achievement necessarily.
Right, James, you've written about a possible victory parade if Liverpool win the Champions League. Is that how it currently stands?
Yeah, the council said last week that the parade details they released, it will go ahead if Liverpool win either the Champions League or the Premier League. So yeah, I must admit, when I read that, I thought, that's interesting, you know, because, you know what, it would be a slightly strange scenario, wouldn't it, to win both domestic cups and not have a parade. I think there should be a parade, actually, if that is all Liverpool do end up with, because I think...
Well, there was in 2006, James.
Yeah, but that's, it's a fantastic achievement. Like, Liverpool haven't won the FA Cup for 16 years. Like, I'm really looking forward to Wembley on the weekend. I agree with Si that I think because of the season it's been, say for argument's sake, the league running goes as we're probably expecting, that City see it out, Liverpool win the FA Cup and then lose to Real Madrid, which is more than possible, it will feel a little bit underwhelming, because you'll think back to 3 weeks earlier and think, you know, I honestly thought we could potentially win the lot, and we've ended up with what you'd have to hold your hands up and admit were the two, you know, the probably the third and the fourth priorities rather than the first and the second when the season kicks off. But then I think once the dust had settled, and I think Liverpool fans especially, certainly the ones I know would think, but I tell you what an unbelievable season that was. And, you know, and to get, 90 points or whatever, and potentially get pipped to the league title by Man City, to potentially, who knows, get edged out of a Champions League final by serial winners like Real Madrid. The idea that that would suddenly be, you know, reason to be like, remember that terrible season when all that happened. Like, I just think because of the memories this team have given us this season and the ride that we've been on. And I'd also factor in the fact that there wasn't a parade when Liverpool won the Premier League title. And obviously Klopp said back then, didn't he? You know, don't worry, you know, there will be a parade at some point. We're just going to have to be patient. And then, of course, the pandemic rolls on so long that it was then completely and utterly impossible to ever have that. I think there should be one if Liverpool only have the two. Imagine what most football clubs are. Yeah, we only won the two domestic cups.
I mean, it's just two.
It seems stupid to even think about it. When I think, even in my lifetime, the long spells Liverpool have gone without winning anything. You know, I remember the excitement when Liverpool won the League Cup under Kenny Dalglish in, you know, what was that, 2012, and they hadn't won anything. What was that, 6 years since the FA Cup in 2006? You know, when Klopp won his first trophy with Liverpool, you know, that had been a long time again, hadn't it? Having won nothing after Kenny with the Rodgers years. So, yeah, I think, personally, even if it is only the two domestic cups, there should definitely be a parade.
Hopefully that last 5 minutes will be irrelevant come the end of the season. I just want a word at the end of the pod about fans heading to Paris. Of course, mad scramble for tickets, Si, at the moment. Everyone's trying to nail down a ticket to get there. They're thinking it's not that far. Price is, from €70 to €690, which I find absolutely phenomenal. Jürgen said, if you don't get a ticket, Paris is big enough that you can go there without a ticket and have a good time. He's spot on. Paris is lovely. Is that the right thing to say? Should we all be heading to Paris for a good time?
Well, it's not like at the end of his first season charge when they went to Basel. And, you know, Basel's basically the size of Warrington. That was a bad suggestion, although I can understand why he probably got carried away in the moment a little bit. Maybe misunderstanding just the appetite amongst Liverpool fans to be there. You know, it was only early on in his reign as manager. But, I mean, Paris is an enormous city. If there was any city where you're going to have an excess number of fans, I would say it's got to be Paris or London, really. But, yeah, the ticket situation is appalling, really. I mean, UEFA, to put all those extra tickets on a ballot and to see the prices of people who've won on that ballot charging extortionate amounts of money, that is not a solution to solve football's ticketing problems for big games. Absolutely appalling. And, you know, you're only going to get maybe 20 to 25,000 fans of each team's, you know, in each end. I think when I think about Madrid, you know, there was two lively ends of Liverpool and Tottenham, and then almost silence in the middle of it all throughout the games and contribute towards the atmosphere. I think that needs to be corrected. But yeah, we'll be writing about that, I'm sure, on the page, The Athletic, over the next couple of weeks. Because, you know, I know already, I mean, I was quite fortunate that in my group of friends, as soon as the game was moved to Paris, they booked flights to Brussels on that day for £25, which I've told James and the other lads in the WhatsApp group that I'm on. So they were ahead of me, and I managed, you know, to plan ahead a little bit, particularly when you see the draw that Liverpool got. It was a safe bet that Liverpool would get to the final. I'm just glad that Man City aren't in the final for all sorts of number of reasons, really. I don't think it would have been a fiesta of football in Paris. I don't think we'd have been able to enjoy the weekend on any level. And now, you know, Real Madrid, it's just Real Madrid in Paris, same as 81. If Liverpool were to get a 1-0 win off the daft left back, I think you'd take that, wouldn't you?
I think AK and Phil Thompson and David Johnson, they're all going to be busy, aren't they, for the next few weeks. Brilliant stuff. I just want to give a shout out before we finish the pod to everyone from the official Liverpool supporters clubs who came from around the world, and I mean like Australia, Los Angeles, everywhere, Africa, to Anfield on Friday night and celebrated together. I know loads of them listened to the pod and plenty mentioned how much they enjoy it. So thanks very much for the great comments. Hope you enjoyed your trip to Anfield. There's some great stuff on the site at the moment, including Sizebit. We didn't even get to talk about it on Jurgen Klopp's contract and the cost of competing at the very top. And of course, James's piece from the weekend this time, Liverpool couldn't find a way. Also, Kiva's written about how brilliant Alisson is on one-on-ones. Thank you for listening to The Red Agenda. It's back again later in the week. We'll see you then.